Welcome, everyone, one and all, to Inside the Ropes Raw Rundown. I am your host, Kenny McIntyre. Wait a minute.
That's not your name.
No. I felt something was off. I think it was the size of my genitals, actually. I think the size of my genitals were slightly different.
I am absolutely not commenting on the size of either of your genitals. I have not seen either of your genitals, to be fair. That almost sounded like I've seen both of them and have judged a contest or something. That is not the case. I know we all shared a villa in Orlando. But
I was going to say, after sharing the villa, though, I mean, me and him were actively comparing the width and girth of numerous things on our body.
I was not present for any of these conversations. Not they left me out. I didn't get to compare size.
No. You absolutely did not, thankfully. And it was basically...
I was probably too busy stealing Val from you at the time.
Yes, you were. You were rather drunkenly fawning over my wife. I am, of course, Mr. David J. McCutcheon. The one, the only, the usual co-host, the color man, if you will, if you couldn't tell since we opened with penis banter on this show of Inside the Ropes Raw Rundown. I am, of course, joined by the ever wonderful Sandra Ruth Wesseldyke Reinstein.
Hello, everyone. It's very bizarre to be here on the Raw Rundown again. I know David and I have done this before. Kenny apparently doesn't think that we can do a show together without me being drunk. I was like, hey, that 1 week that you were on tour before, we handled the Raw Rundown and the SmackDown summary without me being completely drunk, right? Like, it was just in Orlando when you expect me to record a show at 3 a.m. after Wally Mania.
It was
4 a.m. I know that I was editing the show after 5 a.m. and fell asleep twice editing the show because I was, you know, A, a little bit drunk, and B, it was 5 a.m. and we had just been to Wally Mania. So I really think that those were the circumstances that were more troubling.
In his defense, Sandra, you are currently covered in wine.
No, I'm not, because I changed my clothes. So that sounds a bit sketchy, doesn't it? Work at a liquor store, which everyone, I think most people know that I work at a liquor store in Grand Rapids, Michigan, right? And my favorite thing about working at a liquor store, spoiler alert, not my actual favorite thing because this was fucking stupid. So I decided on my way out, I was like, oh, I'm going to grab a bottle of wine. I'll pay for it, you know, whatever. And so I was going to take a bottle of wine home. I noticed that in the cooler, there was only one of this particular type of wine that I wanted to take home with me because it's my favorite, because it's like $7.99 a bottle, but it's actually pretty good. It's a Vino Verde. I really enjoy that style. So I was like, all right, well, I should probably restock the cooler so that tomorrow I don't get in trouble for not stocking the cooler. And also then, you know, there should have been more of that kind in the cooler anyway. So I was like, all right, I'm going to quick go grab a couple bottles and stock the cooler so that tomorrow there will be cold Vino Verde for anyone who wants it. So I'm carrying, you know, 3 bottles of wine in my arm as I do on a regular basis. And I set 2 of the bottles down on a shelf inside the cooler. One of the bottoms of the wine bottles just falls out. It was a defective bottle. It just clinked against the other bottle, like, just slightly. Like, I wasn't, like, trying to clink bottles together and have a party inside the cooler or anything. But sometimes this happens with really cheap-ass glass. And so the entire bottle just falls over. And it's almost like in slow motion. The bottom of the bottle falls to the ground. Doesn't even shatter or anything. It's just still in one piece. And the entire bottle of wine just cascades onto me and onto the floor. So when David texted me saying, hey, Sandra, what time do you want to record the Raw Rundown? You said you were going to be home by 10 p.m. It's 10 p.m. now. I was like, well, I'm just leaving work because I had to train a girl in closing. So I had to show her where the lights are and I had to show her what has to be done in closing time. So
And also which bottles break easily.
Apparently, I need to show her which bottles break easily because, you know, I expected to have to be there until, like, normally I get out at like 10 after 10 my time, Eastern Standard Time, right? Like, that's normally when I get out of work on a Tuesday. But I told David that I would be home at 11, thinking, you know, just in case something goes wrong, in case I need to, take some time after work, whatever. Like, I'll generously estimate that I'll be home at 11. I did not anticipate that I would have to show someone how to close and then do that. So I was like, all right, whatever. So I'll still be out by like 10:30, 10:45. It'll be fine. I didn't anticipate just being covered in wine and then having to try to mop up a bottle of wine, an entire bottle of wine.
And
broken glass. I mean, there's still some broken glass under the shelf. I'm not going to lie. Like, I didn't clean it up that thoroughly. I sort of like took some paper towels and wiped down the shelf so that it wouldn't be too sticky, and then left a note for my bosses. Like, I really needed to get home, and I mopped up what I could, so sorry. It's still going to be a little sticky, but it's just a hazard of the job. Like, it's not the first bottle of wine I've broken. It's not going to be the last bottle of wine I've broken, but I don't even consider this one my fault, because I was just setting a bottle of wine on a shelf, and it just, like, cascaded all over me. So I drove home covered in vino verde. I was really glad I didn't get pulled over, because the cop would, like, I'd roll down my window, the cop would be like, hello, oh boy, it smells like wine, you're probably drunk off your ass. No, haven't had anything to eat or drink except barbecue chips, but, you know, thumbs up, this is my life.
It's essentially like spring break, but the only one there is you.
Yeah, that's
essentially what it is.
And it's really not as exciting, and I'm just sticky. Like, I'm not even drunk enough to not mind. Because at least on spring break, you know, in your 20s, when you're like, woohoo, like, whoops, I spilled stuff all over me, but whatever, I'm drunk, and this is a party, and it's so much. No, it's not like that at all. It's like, oh, for fuck's sake, I need to get home and record the Raw Rundown with David J. McCutcheon. And now I'm covered in wine, and now I'm going to have to change my clothes when I get home. And also, it's already after 11, and I'm still in the parking lot of work.
That is a long, sticky day.
It was.
And I also make a living with long, sticky days, you guys. this is episode
number... But, like, sexually, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's. All I will say is that knee pads are a plus in my line of work, ladies and gentlemen. This is, of course, episode number 40 of the Raw Rundown. We're going to go over a little bit of news items that have been coming out over the past couple of days. I guess there's no real order to this, so I like Tajiri. Okay. Tajiri, ECW original. It has recently come out, courtesy of the Wrestling Observer Figure 4 Online newsletter, that Tajiri will not be returning to the WWE whenever he gets back. So, kind of nuts. He suffered that knee injury earlier in the year, you know, and he was in the Cruiserweight Classic. He did a good job there. Still looked pretty good for his age. Kind of looked like a Asian Norman Reedus in his older age, I found.
You know what? Now that you mention it, yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. Totally. I saw it and I was like, holy shit, when did that happen?
I'm actually just really proud of myself that I know who Norman Reedus is, because me in pop culture, we don't get along so well.
Tajiri, I think his last match was when he teamed with Shinsuke Nakamura against Bobby Roode and Samoa Joe. So if
when
that
was
is
that?
That was apparently at a I think it was at a NXT taping at some point, or a house show.
It wasn't a taping.
Yeah, well, sort of like a dark match deal.
Okay.
But yeah, so
I was going to say, I actually watch NXT on a weekly basis. I would have remembered that.
Yeah, it would have definitely been noteworthy, and had I heard about it, I definitely would have caught it. But apparently, that was the thing that went down, and kind of sad to see that Tajiri will not be back in action with the WWE, at least in the time being. So, kind of a loss, but I mean, the Cruiserweight division has plenty of other people to plug in, and it's not necessarily lighting the world on fire anyway, but...
Not exactly.
Yeah,
I mean, it's fine. I can't really say that I noticed Tajiri tons in the Cruiserweight. I mean, the Cruiserweight Classic, he was pretty good, right? Like, he was fine. I like Tajiri fine. But it's not like he was someone that I noticed as, oh my gosh, he's going to be a standout. I think there's value to having veterans on the roster to help teach younger guys and work with them. And I think that was kind of Tajiri's role. And... I guess that's no longer his role. So, I mean, fair play if it was WWE's decision, if it was his decision, I don't know. Like,
I'm wondering if they're going to supplant someone like a Sin Cara or one of these guys that's been around a little while that's kind of flailing. But Sin Cara kind of went over to SmackDown, right?
Kalisto? Anyone should be in the cruiserweight division, should absolutely be in the cruiserweight division. Why isn't he in the cruiserweight division? We will get into Kalisto later on.
We will get into Kalisto in a little bit. Speaking of things that didn't catch the world on fire, Shaquille O'Neal is putting the blame in the WWE's court for the match with the Big Show not happening.
In the court, said, like it's basketball.
yeah, you got it. You got it. He's slamming the dunk over their head. I know nothing about basketball, you guys. I'm sorry.
I'm real bad at basketball. I'm real bad at sports in general.
I'm really good at sports. I'm not very good at basketball. Also, speaking of sports, Charlie Beckett and the Gloucester rugby team, right? We're powering them to the finals, you guys. They're in the finals over there for rugby. So congratulations on making the finals, guys. Charlie Beckett, you're a wonderful man. And go Gloucester, right? So, yeah, there you go. Big ITR fans over there. So,
go sports.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah.
You guys, I have to add to this. You guys are going to
sports the shit right out of it. Trust me. You're going to do a great job, Charlie. I know it. I can feel it in my heart of hearts, which is the heart that's within my defective heart.
You have two hearts?
I do.
Are you a Time Lord now?
I'm basically, I have two hearts like a Time Lord, but also two stomachs like a cow.
Ooh.
So there's all sorts
of shit going on in there I wasn't aware of.
It is. That's why I had my pants down whenever you walked in and I was showing Kenny things. So,
fair enough. Yeah.
So Shaq quotes, because they kept playing was why the deal with WWE fell through. First, they said it was me and Big Show. Then they said it was going to be 3-3. Then they canceled it. So when they canceled it, I made other arrangements. And then they tried to call back and tried to get it done. And I just said, I'm not going to do it. They messed it up. So that's Shaq's explanation as to what happened with the Big Show.
To be honest, would it really surprise you if he's telling the truth, though? Like, WWE gave him multiple answers as to what was going to happen, and then they didn't really give him an answer, and they were like, oh, maybe it's done now. And then they were like, oh, no, just kidding. But I don't know what his other arrangements would be. Like, what else is Shaquille O'Neal doing these days? But
I have no idea. Selling athlete's foot cream, maybe. I have no clue. But I will say it would not surprise me in the least. Though the other rumor is that Shaquille O'Neal did not want to lose the match. So make of that what you will.
I saw a rumor about this, but I also saw him respond to that rumor. And I saw him say, no, that wasn't it. And I don't have this in front of me. I have nothing in front of me right now. So I'm not going to quote it exactly. But he said something about like, oh, no, that wasn't it. Like, if it was for the kids, I would do whatever. And for the kids stuck out to me, like, because, you know, whatever, like Shaquille O'Neal lost the Battle Royal last year. He didn't seem to mind that because, you know, the kids would really enjoy seeing Shaquille O'Neal versus the Big Show. And he was like, for the kids.
I will say, I know a lot of 4-year-olds and they were hyped as fuck to see Shaq in the ring.
How many 4-year-olds even know who Shaquille O'Neal is? Like, when is the last time that Shaquille O'Neal was relevant?
The kids, though, you gotta think of the kids. Sonner.
Do it for
God.
The kids.
God, don't be so selfish. You got to do it for the kids.
Of course. I don't know why he couldn't do the match for the kids then. But I mean, if WWE jerked him around, I can't really blame him. Like, if someone came up to me and were like, "Oh, do you need to work? Do you need not to work?" Da 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 da. And it was just like a constant struggle, then I don't really blame him for saying fuck it if his side of the story is true. And I wouldn't really doubt that it is, because WWE seems like the kind of company that might change their mind 12 times.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure we'll get into that on the SmackDown summary.
I haven't even seen SmackDown, but that just fills me with dread. Oh, boy.
Well, it was more pertaining to the events of last week. That will no doubt change the landscape of SmackDown for quite some time.
Or something.
Another tidbit that we have on file here is apparently they are making a movie chronicling the life and times of Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
Are you serious?
Apparently so.
I haven't seen anything about this, but oh boy, does that sound like, okay, wait, who is making this movie? Is WWE making this movie or is a third party making this movie?
A third party is going to be making this movie. According to the Hollywood Reporter, Sony's TriStar Pictures is on board to have this movie currently titled Pandemonium. And it would be directed by Glenn Ficarra and John Requai.
I have no idea who those people are. I know nothing about pop culture, but Pandemonium is the title?
Pandemonium. It's pandemonium up in here!
It should be called What a Maneuver! They are missing a step here. I take offense at the title Pandemonium when it could be called What a Maneuver, or Anything Can Happen in the World Wrestling Federation. I currently listen to Vince McMahon on commentary every week for Retro Raw. There are so many catchphrases that they could title this movie.
My favorite thing about Vince on commentary was he had two drives, right? He was like a stick shift, right? and one of them was, oh my God, I can't believe it, he's going to the top rope. And the second one was, oh, he comes down. He's crashing down. He's got to miss one, two. Oh, my God. I can't believe he kicked out of it.
That's incredibly accurate. Also, one, two, hand, it's over. No, it's not.
There's no way that he could possibly kick out. I would bet every bit of my fortune.
And the match is over. It is over. He has won the championship. No.
the guys who were directing this wrote Bad Santa. So
oh boy.
I have no idea how that correlates with making a movie about Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
That makes me frightened that it's just going to be about Vince McMahon and his grapefruits and also the penis attached to those grapefruits.
Yeah, I know. Like,
this could be really terrible, David.
I think that this type of movie would be best worked as a dramedy.
Yeah.
You know, something to where it can make you laugh occasionally, but what I would focus on is the hostile takeover of the wrestling industry in the 80s, less so than Vince McMahon's ego.
That would be fascinating, but I feel like if you're putting this in the hands of the guys who wrote or directed or whatever you just told me, Bad Santa, it's just going to be Vince McMahon pushing people into pools and then, like, chuckling backstage.
Yeah.
And being quirky. That's kind of disappointing, actually, because I think Vince McMahon is a fascinating figure in wrestling. And to be fair, Vince McMahon is the reason that we're doing this, right? Like, without Vince McMahon and without the WWF/WWE, we wouldn't have this interest in wrestling. We wouldn't have this interest in Raw and SmackDown. We wouldn't be doing a Raw rundown or a SmackDown summary. And, I mean, Vince McMahon is fascinating in a lot of ways, the way he took over the territories, the way he raised his family being in the business. I think there's a lot to be said for a McMahon kind of, like, not documentary so much, but, you know, movie based on real life events, that kind of thing. I don't think we'll ever get the real story behind the McMahons because I think they're always going to be too involved in it to tell the truth.
Yeah, no, there's without question. In order for them to have any clearance, they would need complete control and creative direction. So either way, it could be really interesting at the very least.
Yeah.
And it does have a chance to be good. But
even
I mean,
if it lies off its ass, I don't care. Like, it could still be a good movie. I mean, the Bad Santa thing gives me pause, but
yeah. And apparently they also wrote the Bad News Bears remake. So
I've never seen anything Bad News Bears, so I don't really know.
Well, all you needed to hear was remake, and that's just
true.
You know, automatically. On a more somber note, it appears that Wendy Barlow, the girlfriend and longtime girlfriend and now current fiance of Ric Flair, was in a serious automobile accident tonight.
Oh, the lady who was on Wife Swap with him? The one?
Yeah. Exactly. We don't have any confirmation of how bad it was in terms of her health, but apparently she's been hospitalized, so We're certainly hoping that everything goes okay with her. I'm not a praying man, but thoughts are certainly with Rick and his family. You'd never want to hear about this stuff. I think that for most of us, that's like the worst case scenario, the worst thing that could happen.
Yeah, so, definitely.
So fingers crossed that she's going to be okay and that she gets out of the hospital very soon and that there's no permanent damage done to her body or her mind. So fingers crossed, guys. Gotta stay positive. So all the best to Rick and his family. On to the Raw Rundown, you guys. This is Raw Rundown number 40. It took place in my home state of Missouri, in my rival city of Kansas City. And I'm really happy that this was a bad crowd because I get to shit all over Kansas City in this episode.
So I know how much glee that gives you.
Yeah. Kansas City can suck it. They're a bad baseball town, and now it's proven that they are a bad wrestling town. And I love it. I love it so much. Remember whenever Raw came to St. Louis, Sandra?
I do.
And Sami Zayn picked up the Intercontinental title, and everyone in attendance in St. Louis chanted yes at the thought of him winning the Intercontinental title.
And it was just the thought of him winning. I mean, he hadn't even won it when he picked up the title and just gave us the idea of him winning the Intercontinental title.
And everybody went apeshit.
Everybody went apeshit. And everyone was like, yeah, Sami Zayn's a fucking star, because that's how St. Louis rolls.
That is how St. Louis rolls, even though it is a traditional babyface territory. They still know good people from bad people. Unlike Kansas City, which is just a festering shithole. My God, can you believe this? We were given numerous gems throughout the night, and Kansas City just sat down and went to sleep. Chris Jericho, of
can
all
Can I tell
people,
you how nervous I am for Raw to come to Grand Rapids? Like, I'm really nervous. We had a good crowd last time Raw was here in 2013, because that is the last time that Raw was here. But like, I'm going to Raw in May, and
Sandra, can I give you a drum roll?
Okay. Right,
can you give me a drum roll, please? Here's the thing, Sandra.
Okay, David.
Michigan crowds are fucking great. I've never seen a Michigan crowd to where I go, oh man, this is just a horrible wrestling crowd. Michigan crowds are always, at the very bare minimum, tolerable. So I have no doubt that Grand Rapids will not really make my radar one way or the other.
I hope not. Well, I mean, I hope we make your radar in the sense that we're a good crowd for Raw. Like, we were a good crowd for that Raw in 2013, so I'm really happy about that. It's going to be really interesting because, like, I'm going to Backlash the night before in Chicago. And then I'm going to, like, Raw and Grand Rapids. So comparing the two crowds is going to be really fascinating.
It will be. It will be interesting to see the attendance on that Jinder Mahal match. Yeah. Chris
That's
Jericho
the one in Chicago.
Out.
That's the one that worries me.
Yeah, that one's not going to be pretty. Chris Jericho came out to start off the episode. He said that this was going to be a monumental edition of the highlight reel because it could be the last time that we have a highlight reel on Monday Night Raw. Ever again. There you go. I got one of the catchphrases. You got the other one. This is why we make a good team, Sandra.
Yes, exactly.
He ended up telling all the fans that he was going to beat the crap out of Kevin Owens, who he said was not really the face of America, that he was maybe the hemorrhoid of America instead.
Hilarity.
So funny. The Miz comes out, though, and interrupts him and forces the ring crew to put together the set of Miz TV instead. So this was great, though, because, like, the highlight reel set was completely dismantled. And
I love them rolling up the carpet and Chris Jericho wouldn't move. So they're trying to roll it and Chris Jericho's just standing there and they're like rolling it into Chris Jericho. And he's like, what? I have to move? Oh, okay.
I have to move? Oh, all right. Sorry. Oh, so great. So great. And so Miz TV takes over the segment abruptly out of nowhere. And right as we're about to get into Miz TV, of course, The one and only Dean Ambrose comes out and interrupts that, which it becomes the Ambrose Asylum instead. And of course, Chris Jericho and Dean Ambrose, a long-term feud a while back ago. He ended up shoving Chris Jericho into 69 thumbtacks. Chris Jericho ended up destroying Mitch, the potted plant.
Not to mention the jacket situation.
And it all culminated with the light-up jacket destruction at the hands of Dean Ambrose. This ultimately led to Dean giving Chris Jericho a present, and Jericho was apprehensive about opening the present.
He didn't really want to open the present. He didn't know what Dean Ambrose would put in the present, which, to be fair, if you've watched Dean Ambrose segments for any period of time, that might be exploding snakes. That might just, I mean, who knows what Dean Ambrose is going to put in a present. So I understand Chris Jericho's reticence here.
And given the list of KO that Jericho got in
and
his
Jericho
last
even
present,
mentioned that he was like, last time I got a present, it didn't go very well.
Yeah. This was kind of fun because whenever he opened up the present, it ended up being a shitty jacket with Christmas lights decorating it.
Which was amazing.
Just the
so
best
good.
Thing, right?
It was the most Dean Ambrose gift possible, and yes. B, a lovely display of continuity.
It was. And it also kind of fit the goofy baby face version of Dean Ambrose in a good way. Not in a way that detracts from his character.
No, I liked Dean Ambrose here, actually. Like he still makes me roll my eyes because I'm never going to be a big Dean Ambrose fan. Because No matter how great Dean Ambrose gets as a character, it always culminates in a Dean Ambrose match. And that's unfortunate. And I realize how rich that is coming from someone who loves Psycho Sid as much as I do. But Dean Ambrose kind of tends to be a little too on the wacky side sometimes to be taken seriously. Like, I don't necessarily believe him all the time. I think this was a great display of Dean Ambrose, though. And I mean, it seemed like the most Dean Ambrose gift ever. Like, of course he would buy a cheap suit jacket, put Christmas lights on it, and then hand it to Chris Jericho, like, hey, look, I replaced your jacket. Like, I know it's not a $15,000 jacket, which apparently, like, I remember reading news at the time, apparently that jacket was worth, like, way more than $15,000. It was, like, $25,000, like, just for the jacket itself, because of the type of jacket it was. So when Chris Jericho was saying, like, you owe me $15,000 for a jacket, it's actually way more, which is weird, because I can't imagine spending that much money on a jacket, like, ever.
That's what you buy a car with.
Right! Yeah, like, my car is worth, I don't know, 1/15th of that right now.
No. It's very, very sad. But this was a good little segment. It ended with a dirty deeds to The Miz, because of course The Miz was running his mouth trying to make everything about himself.
Of course. I'm a big Miz fan. I know that you have come around to The Miz. I know that you hated The Miz for a very long time. It was very interesting to see three talk show segments try to compete for airtime, right? Because I was like, well, I kind of vote for Miz TV, actually, out of the three of these. Like, I do love a good highlight reel. I don't love The Ambrose Asylum at all. I have no love for that show because it's usually just Dean Ambrose being wacky and kind of annoying. But
to me, all of these things are all the same.
Well, that's like, my other point is, like, the talk show segments are so interchangeable. There's nothing different about them. Like, a different color carpet, maybe, like a different setting, like instead of the Jerritron 6000, which I did like Jericho pointing out, it's a Jerritron 6000, by the way, it's a TV, and explaining that it is a TV, because he's like, I'm not sure if you understand what the Jerritron 6000 is.
Something that was great that I had in my notes that I forgot to mention, whenever Ambrose gave the jacket to Jericho, he goes, try it on, man.
Yeah.
So good. This was a nice little segment, and I thought that it moved the show along nicely. I know a lot of people weren't too hot on it.
I feel like some people I heard say that it went on too long and that it was boring, but I found myself kind of into it the whole time, actually, because I think all three of them have such dynamic personalities that I enjoyed the interplay, and I was glad that Miz was there so it wasn't just Jericho and Ambrose, so they kind of had a third party, and Miz taking the dirty deeds is perfect, right? Because you know, Miz is a shithead. He should take the dirty deeds at the end of these types of segments. I love him.
And I love booing him. Let's be honest, too. Where everything is moving along, it's going to end up being Dean Ambrose versus The Miz.
Well, of course it is. I mean, it was right. Dean Ambrose versus The Miz. How do you feel about that? I can't remember if you and Kenny have talked about this on the Raw Rundown. I do listen to the Raw Rundown. I just don't remember. But have you talked
about...
It all
blends in after a while.
It kind of does. And I can't remember what conversations we have, like, just personally versus what's on the show. Like, there's just a lot going on. But... how do you feel about Miz and Dean Ambrose being kind of a feud that they're teasing when Miz and Dean Ambrose was the feud on SmackDown? And you kind of think that the superstar shakeups should really shake up the feuds and like create
I hate it. I was looking forward to The Miz coming over and doing some interesting things that we haven't seen lately. And now he's just in a thing with Dean Ambrose. I think it's stupid. I think that they'll make it work and I think it'll be fine. But I was ready for something different.
Yeah, I was kind of, I feel the same. And it's not that I don't think Miz and Dean Ambrose are making this work. It's not that I wasn't entertained by the segment. I just kind of feel like Miz versus Jericho, actually, I love. Because Miz versus Jericho, like Miz and Jericho interacting is fascinating to me because so much of the Miz's character is Chris Jericho. Like,
you know what I would have had?
Chris Jericho? Am I getting my hair right? Yeah, yeah. Like, I feel like Miz has taken so much from Chris Jericho, and Jericho knows that, obviously. Like, they're very similar in the way that, you know, they wear their suits, and they're stars, and they're
and
above
people. And even just their personalities.
Yeah, their demeanor to the crowd.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In a perfect world, The Miz would have stayed on SmackDown and feuded with Shinsuke Nakamura. But instead, now he's fucking diddling around with Dolph Ziggler. So
Have Miz and Chris Jericho ever had a proper feud?
Not since I've been watching. They may have at one point, but not since I've been watching again.
That's what bums me out about the fact that we know that Chris Jericho is leaving again soon.
Yeah, I know.
I want Chris Jericho to come back after his tour and after his Inside the Ropes dates in Ireland. Inside the Ropes.
Yeah.
Tickets are on insidetheropes.co.uk. I don't remember the actual plug, but sorry, Kenny. But Chris Jericho's coming to Ireland, so buy tickets. It's at the venue site. I'm bad at this, but...
That's okay. They know. The people know.
The
that
people
you can
see find
Chris
out
Jericho
this information.
In Ireland.
I don't live in Ireland, so I haven't had to investigate this information, but...
If you're Irish and you want to book us to come over, then by all means, pay for our travel and lodge and we'll be over.
Yeah, sure, why not? But the point of all of that is... that I think it would be fascinating to see a Chris Jericho, like a proper babyface Chris Jericho, because right now we have kind of the best version of babyface Chris Jericho because he's just come off a really positive heel run where he was despicable but became so loved just by virtue of organic character progression. So we have the best version of babyface Chris Jericho, and The Miz is just an utter, utter prick. And I feel like I really want to see a feud between the two of them, and I don't like that I know, because we know that Chris Jericho is leaving, that that's not on the horizon right now. That's what
I
really want to see.
Be,
like, Dean Ambrose seems incidental to the situation.
It could be eventually, and I think that Jericho leaving for a while will actually help keep his character fresh. And so, a little interesting thing about this before we move on, but the reason that Jericho and The Miz are so relevant is that they no longer remain the same characters that they were several years ago.
No, they
ended up evolving very naturally. And they listened to what the crowd wanted or didn't want and became that.
You know what I really want to happen?
What's that?
I really want them to reference that moment where they teased that a multimedia cross-platform star was coming back and The Miz came back, right? But it was actually Chris Jericho who interrupted The Miz, because that's the only time that I can remember them actually facing off and having some sort of interaction.
Yeah.
As a thing, because Chris Jericho sort of usurped The Miz, because The Miz was sort of just like the, like, oh, lol, it's not The Miz. Of course it's not The Miz. Like, we're not going to promote the return of a big star and have it be The Miz. He was just the fall guy for that. I would love for The Miz, in talking smack fashion, in proper Miz fashion, to be like, From the day you came back in 2014, you have tried to steal my thunder while I am the one who's here now. Oh, this feud could be so good, and why are they teasing me with it when they're not going to give it to me?
They're terrible. They're just utterly, utterly terrible.
It's true.
Next up on Raw, we ended up having the inverse of the match that we had last week between Jeff Hardy and Cesaro. This week we had broken Matt Hardy. Yes, I'm calling him broken because, God damn it, he did three deletes in a row.
He was pretty friggin' broken in this match.
He was more broken here than he's ever been. And so
I don't know that he was ever been, but like in the WWE, WWE, yes.
In the WWE, versus Sheamus, as you guys well know, Jeff Hardy went over on Cesaro the week before. This week, it was Matt Hardy who ended up beating Sheamus. So the Hardys are 2-0 against Sheamus and Cesaro. It was a little bit cheap. Jeff jumped up on the apron, and while Sheamus was in control, Sheamus got distracted, which allowed Matt to hit the Twist of Fate for the win. And Cesaro was a little hot-headed. Sheamus was very hot-headed. After the contest, Cesaro convinced Sheamus to shake the hand of Matt Hardy after losing to him. I was really hoping that they wouldn't attack him after this, and they didn't. It was an unclean loss, but a clean bill of sportsmanship.
It was. I'm glad that Cesaro and Sheamus remain sportsmanlike. Okay, so the thing with WWE is normally, because this is the go-home show to a pay-per-view, which I think is important to mention, because I had completely forgotten that Payback was this Sunday. Because
I think we all wanted to forget, because there's no matches on the card that really stand out.
There really aren't at all. So I guess we'll see what happens. I mean, maybe we'll do some predictions at the end of the show, but like as we go along, usually what happens in WWE, right, is whoever wins on the go-home show loses on the pay-per-view. And you had Jeff Hardy win over Antonio Cesaro last week, and now you've had Matt Hardy win over Sheamus. So I think the most exciting possibility is that Sheamus and Cesaro, they win over Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy, the Hardy Boys, the not broken Hardys at this point, right, in WWE, because they are just the Hardy Boys, or the Hardy Adults, or the Hardys, or whatever they're called.
We really need to do away with the boys part whenever these guys are nearly 40.
Too old to be boys, but I'm a woman, and so I deal with being called a girl all the time, so I guess maybe it's just sort of fine for me for them to just be called the Hardy Boys, but whatever.
Right.
That's a
right.
whole nother situation.
It is.
But
So I have a theory with this, though. I have a feeling that it all depends if WWE has secured the rights for the Broken Matt deal.
Yes.
Whenever they secure the rights for the Broken Matt deal, expect the Hardy Boys to lose
and Matt broken to become again. Broken.
Yes.
Because that's what
exactly.
I was going to say. Like, I want Sheamus and Cesaro to win on Sunday. I want them to win at Payback. And the reason the Hardys have given on social media, not explicitly in WWE because they haven't really been able to, which is fair enough. Like, I'm not criticizing them for that. But on social media and in interviews and that kind of stuff, the reason that they're not so broken anymore and the reason that they've been given is that they won the gold. Right? Like, they were on this expedition of gold and they won loads and loads of titles. I can't list them all because I don't know them all. But they won loads and loads of titles. And it all culminated in them returning at WrestleMania and winning the Raw Tag Team Championships. And that sort of healed them. And that fixed them. And that was the completion of their goal. Because why did Matt Hardy get broken in the first place? Matt Hardy got broken in the first place because Matt and Jeff in TNA were the Tag Team Champions. Jeff jumped on him or something. No, Jeff broke his leg. That's what it was. Jeff broke his leg. They had to give up their tag team titles. And then I think they had a match because of that. And Matt got broken because they lost their gold. So this whole thing, this whole broken saga has been about them obtaining gold to try to rectify the situation that they lost the tag team titles in TNA, which cost Matt's family money, which cost them prestige, which cost them fame, which cost Matt part of his career in his mind. Like, if you've watched TNA Impact, during those times. That's exactly the reasoning that he was given. So for them to win the Raw Tag Team Championships in WWE at WrestleMania, no less, right? Like, I can see why that would heal the Hardys, because that's the ultimate goal. I mean, TNA is not the ultimate goal. Hate to break it to you, but TNA is not the ultimate goal. I know, right? WWE is the ultimate goal, and that's where you're going to make the most money. And if you're a champion in WWE on the grandest stage of them all, then I can see where that would heal the Hardys, and they're more the Hardy Boys, and they're more back to their old selves. But what if they lose that gold / silver and red? What if they lose those titles? What's that going to do to them? And I think that could be a really interesting way of WWE telling the broken story over again without it just completely rehashing everything that happened, because you don't want to have Jeff, like, break his leg on a dirt bike again.
No. No, 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 you do not need anything like that. Lord knows we do not need anything like that.
Isn't it interesting, the continuity of it, though, and how much it actually makes sense if they go that way? No,
if they go with it, but I mean, that's asking a lot in this era of the WWE to go with something that just makes sense.
And maybe it's not going to be Sheamus and Cesaro. Maybe it's going to be somebody else down the line. But I think that that would be a really great story for them to tell. And I'm not someone who really loves fantasy booking and predicting things. And probably because if I come up with stuff like this, which everyone has come up with, it's not like this is an original idea to me, but like,
of course,
you know, everyone kind of hopes that this type of story happens. And if it doesn't happen, I think we need to kind of go along with what they do if the story is still good. But it would be really, really cool.
It would be great, but I don't know if... I guess it just... there's no use in really dwelling on it too much because of the fact that we don't really know the legality of it.
True.
And I think it's all, obviously the money is in the broken character. That's why the WWE is interested in that. And that's where it is leading. Meltzer and Alvarez have mentioned it before on the Wrestling Observer podcast.
It's why this I was a little surprised going. Just how broken Matt was in this particular match, because he was definitely
He did the three consecutive deletes. Mm-hmm. So, and that's something he hasn't done yet in WWE. But general manager, the new general manager, Kurt Angle, was backstage on the phone saying they was going to see if Kalisto wanted anything to get out of this match. It's a really tough match. The dumpster match. By the way, I was giggling so much all night every time they said the word dumpster. I don't know. I wasn't drunk. I wasn't high. But man, oh man, just the idea of Kalisto in a dumpster match just made me giggly.
I would have liked to be. I wasn't either, but I would have liked to be during this match.
Yeah, yeah. It turns out, though, that The Miz and Maurice are bugging the general manager, Kurt Angle.
Well, they had to wait for 2 whole minutes.
2 whole minutes it's they had to wait.
Unacceptable for someone the star level of The Miz.
They had to wait 2 whole minutes to talk to the general manager of Raw. And Angle breaks the news to The Miz and tells him he needs to find a partner because he's facing Ambrose and Jericho later tonight in the main event. And man, oh man, oh man. It seems that The Miz was going to have to find somebody to be his tag team partner. And I think we might as well want to get this out of the way. That way we can make way for it later. And that way we don't forget about it in the meantime. The Miz is going around backstage talking to all sorts of folks. I think my favorite interaction, though, was, of course, whenever he went up to Curtis Axel and Heath Slater.
Yes.
And was looking for a
partner.
Stars
of the Marine 5 Battleground, right?
Sure.
I think
not?
It's Battleground because I think it coincides with the pay-per-view Battleground. Like, they named the Marine 5 after a WWE pay-per-view,
Let's not overlook the best part, which was Rhino walking around in the background with his cheese and crackers, offering Maurice some, who knocks the tray out of his hand, and the crackers go flying.
Now, David, you're an American like I am.
Sure,
what
I
are
am.
Your feelings on Easy Cheese?
Oh, man, I thought you were going to ask me something about Trump.
No.
The Easy Cheese, it's something that I can never eat again.
Right. Okay, so before your heart decided to rebel and turn heel
sure.
on you,
Sure.
What were your feelings on Easy Cheese? If you were presented with a platter of crackers and Easy Cheese on a table, would you partake in such a thing?
I would partake lightly. I would probably have two crackers with a little bit of Easy Cheese. You don't want to overdo it on the Easy Cheese because it's nothing but sodium.
No, of course not.
It's nothing but sodium. So,
but it's kind of delicious, though.
You put a little bit. What happens is you put one cracker out. You put a little bit of Easy Cheese in the middle of that cracker. Then you put another cracker on top of it to make an Easy Cheese sandwich.
That's a good way to go.
That is how you enjoy Easy Cheese. And I would have probably one or two of those little Easy Cheese sandwiches and be done with it. You don't want to overdo it. Even before all of the health issues, Easy Cheese is something that I was wise enough to look on the back at the nutritional value and go, I don't need this in my arteries.
Oh, it's so absolutely terrible for you, but I will maintain that it is delicious. And sometimes I just crave Easy Cheese, and none of these segments are helping, right? Like, now that Rhino and Heath Slater are backstage eating, you know, spray cheese again, I just want to buy some.
They need to be WWE Battleground presented by Easy Cheese.
It really does. They should cross promote the shit out of this.
They really should.
I'm just glad to see that there's cheese and cracker continuity with Rhino and Heath Slater.
So long as they have the cheese and crackers, I'm okay with them being there. I love it. I think it's great. The Cruiserweights had a match up next. It was Neville and
TJ. Can I also just say, why didn't Curtis Axel or Heath Slater? Well, I understand that Heath Slater's like, no, I have a partner. It's fine. Like, I have a partner already, and it's baby Rhino, and we eat cheese and crackers together, and we have a bond. So, no, I will not be your partner, The Miz. Why did Curtis Axel turn down the chance to be in the main event of Raw? Curtis Axel hasn't seen anything near the main event of Raw in a really long time. I mean, it's been so long since we've seen Curtis Axel that his beard has grown monumentally since we've even seen him last.
I think that he should have a new gimmick as the roadie for the Drifter.
I mean,
that's what I want. Because
I'm watching Retro Raw, and so I have a bit of, you know, feeling. When you say the word roadie, I just think of
the real
Double J Jesse James.
You can't wait to be alone with your baby tonight.
I really love that song, though. Like, every time he comes on screen, I get very excited about the song.
It is the best. Ain't I great?
But the thing is, every time you mention Jeff Jarrett and that song together, I'm like, no, he's not the real singer. And I get really affronted. Jesse Jammies is the real singer of that song.
Can I ask you a question, though?
Of course.
Who sang Blame It on the Rain?
I have no idea.
What was it, the people who actually sang it, or was it Milli Vanilli?
No.
See?
Milli Vanilli, that brings me back to 92.
Whenever that song comes on the radio, it doesn't say whoever actually sang it. It says Milli Vanilli.
Yeah, so, but when Milli Vanilli were exposed as lip syncers, did they actually credit the actual singers of Blame It on the Rain? Because what I'm saying is that Jesse James was credited with singing with My Baby Tonight. We know him. He became a superstar on his own. I'm laughing.
We may need to get into the legality of songwriting credits.
We do.
TJ Perkins and Neville, they had a match. It was against Austin Aries and Jack Gallagher. It was pretty good. Your standard tag fare. Austin Aries got a hell of a hot tag in this one. I thought that was pretty cool. Good psychology. Jack Gallagher kind of works good in a tag situation, I thought. As the underdog babyface that gets his ass beat for a while and then makes the hot tag. Kind of cool, right? You know?
I mean, I like three out of the four people in this match, and the wrestling was good. And TJ Perkins is the one I don't like, in case anyone's confused. TJ Perkins is a bad wrestler. It's just he is dull as dog shit, and I don't care.
I think that now that he's a heel, that will help him because he wrestled as a heel, not, you know, he didn't come out and go, I hate your town sports team, boo. But he wrestled as a heel in the Cruiserweight Classic, which a lot of people sent me a lot of flack whenever I say that. You're like, well, he didn't come out and insult anybody's sports team. It's like, shut the fuck up. You don't know shit about wrestling psychology.
Well, my thing about TJ Perkins is I feel like he wrestled as more of a heel in the Cruiserweight Classic than he has wrestled as a heel on Raw since his heel turn.
Listen, here's the thing about TJ Perkins in the Cruiserweight Classic, you guys. He took everybody's favorite wrestlers, beat them up, and made them give up.
Which was great.
He made everyone's favorite wrestlers, Kota Ibushi and Rich Swann and Gargano, he made them all tap out and say, you are the better man, sir. I submit to you. That is a wrestling heel. It's very subliminal. I don't know if your tiny little brains can understand it, people in my mentions who don't understand it, but that's how it goes.
I think my current issue with TJ Perkins is that he's doing less of that and being more just still TJ Perkins on Raw. Yeah. Like, I don't know that he's actually shown much of a difference between babyface, ring, TJ Perkins, because that's the start to his song. And his song is great, by the way. His song's super babyface. But I don't know that he's shown that much of a difference between his wrestling as a babyface on Raw and a heel on Raw. I think that he wrestled better as a heel in the actual Cruiserweight Classic than he has since his heel turn on Raw.
Well, I mean, to be fair, he's only had a couple of weeks thus far, too.
True. And the Cruiserweights aren't exactly given a spotlight, which is why this was fine for me, but I don't have all that much to say about it. I love Adrian Neville. I love him forever. He is the worst and, like, the worst human because he's so angry about everything, and I just love him as a heel.
Yeah. Aries ended up getting the pinfall victory over Perkins with a discus, so that was pretty cool. And they had a really good...
Are Adrian and Austin wrestling on Sunday?
Oh, fuck if I know. I'll be perfectly honest, you guys. I did all the research for this show. I'm not doing any research for the pay-per-view. I do not give a shit.
I think Austin and Adrian are wrestling on Sunday, and I'm curious if an Austin Aries win here means that he will once again lose to Adrian Neville, which is what I hope happens. But I don't know, because he didn't actually pin Adrian Neville. Like, if Adrian Neville would have gotten pinned by Austin Aries here, then I would have been like, oh, good, he's retaining. But Austin Aries didn't pin Adrian Neville, so it gives me pause and I'm just not sure. But I also haven't watched any of 205 Live to know what's been going on there.
So we get to the point where this is what outraged everyone, you guys. The dumpster match with Braun Strowman and Kalisto. Strowman comes out and he says that everyone in the arena is garbage, and whenever he puts Kalisto in there, it's going to be like that he's throwing all of them in the garbage, and yada yada yada. Kind of fun, but kind of also very scripted.
It's adorable that he's still pretending to be a bad guy when he is the biggest babyface on Raw, but go on.
Well, it's very clearly a directive from Vince McMahon, because he's talking like every character that Vince McMahon writes for. So, I don't know. To me, that's just sort of silly.
Fun fact, before we even get started with the match, 1997 Stone Cold Steve Austin on Retro Raw, he had no use for the crowd either. None whatsoever. Yeah. He was like, oh, all y'all with your Stone Cold signs and, you know, you, Vince McMahon, with your dimple chin. Like, listen to Kenny and me talk about it on the Retro Raw rundown that we just did. Stone Cold Steve Austin was like, no, I have no use for the crowd whatsoever. And this was after his supposed babyface turn. But he was, like, the biggest babyface in the company. But he didn't have any use for the crowd because he hadn't changed his character. So I'm just not super sure why I'm supposed to be booing Braun Strowman at this point. Go on.
So, Braun Strowman, a few things that I absolutely love about this man. This match was a squash, basically, in favor of Strowman. And Kalisto gets the fluke win by knocking Strowman into the dumpster. This was sort of like whenever Cody Rhodes beat the Big Show in a tables match.
That's exactly what it reminded me of.
Yeah, yeah, and because Big Show stepped onto a table and it accidentally broke, and so Cody Rhodes won. That was more or less this finish. I hated the finish, but not for the reasons that you would expect. A dumpster match, ladies and gentlemen, regardless of what they're trying to sell you on this edition of Raw, the winner has to close the lid on
that
the loser.
That was my question. I was very unclear as to the rules because I've never seen an actual dumpster match before, but I figured you would have had to at least close the lid because in a casket match, you have to close the lid.
In my notes, Sandra, lid should be shut to win just like a casket match. So
okay, so we're on the same page.
Astute observation. That was my main issue with it. You know, I know a lot of people are like, I can't believe Kalisto won. Kalisto didn't win because he was on the receiving end of the most vicious choke slams that I've ever seen in the history of wrestling right after this.
Mm-hmm.
This looked absolutely brutal. It made Braun look like a monster. Don't worry too much about everybody's so up in arms about Kalisto beating him. He didn't really win this, right?
Yeah, it didn't bother me so much that Kalisto won. And actually, I will present a devil's advocate argument. Like, I know we love to shit on Kalisto here at Inside the Ropes. I still kind of like Kalisto. I think he's actually very talented. I think his promos
are one of the most talented guys on the roster. Yes.
Yeah, he is. And his wrestling is very, very good. I know that there are a lot of people who don't care necessarily because, you know, like, there are different facets of wrestling for everybody. I do want to actually see some good matches. And I think that Kalisto, especially in the cruiserweight division, if they present him properly, could have some really killer matches because I've seen him have very good matches and he can be a really fiery babyface. So I understand the theory behind them wanting Kalisto to win because Kalisto has not won a thing for a long time, right? Like, I think he won something against Dolph Ziggler because Dolph Ziggler, right? But Kalisto has just come over to Raw. He's new on Raw. They're trying to showcase Kalisto. And I guess I can see them trying to do something very similar with Kalisto that they tried to do with Sami Zayn and Braun Strowman. Kalisto's not going to be able to beat Braun Strowman just outright in a match because, of course, he's not, right? Because
I would argue, though, that you do have a valid point, but there are other guys that you could put Kalisto over on other than Braun Strowman.
No, there are. But
who should be very protected.
But I think if they're trying to present Kalisto right now, and don't get me wrong, in my opinion, I think Kalisto should be in the cruiserweight division and push there. I think that should be his place because I think that's where he can shine. That's what I've said since the original draft in July. Why wasn't Kalisto drafted to Raw so that he could be in the cruiserweight division? Or whenever they announced a cruiserweight division. Like, I don't remember when they actually announced that was going to be a thing. I think it was after the actual draft, but whatever. Like, it doesn't make any sense that Kalisto was drafted to SmackDown where the cruiserweight division is not, because I think that's where he should be and that's where he can shine because he can have good wrestling matches there. I understand the theory behind them saying, look at how much heart Kalisto has. Look at how much he's like fighting the monster and he's fighting the monster and he actually won this match. So they can say like, hey, Kalisto has a victory over Braun Strowman. They can use that as a talking point going forward to try and present Kalisto as a star. He still got beat down afterward. Braun Strowman still kicked
Got his ass handed to him and it was pretty great.
Who was like, why didn't Braun Strowman just win then? I would have preferred Braun Strowman just winning then too, because Braun Strowman's the biggest babyface on Raw for me. I love Braun Strowman. Heart eyes at Braun Strowman forever. But yeah. I don't think that losing, quote unquote, well, not even quote unquote, he did. He lost the match, apparently, because you don't have to shut the lid in a dumpster match on Raw in 2017. But him losing the dumpster match didn't make a lick of difference for me. So it really didn't bother me because it was kind of an epic beatdown afterwards and he shoved the dumpster off a ledge. I mean, it was only 3 feet, but still.
Yeah, I was going to say, the thing about the dumpster and the ledge, though, I thought that was the only thing that was... I took more offense to that than Braun Strowman losing because it looked stupid. It was just like a little... It was like an MMW drop, you guys.
Oh, gosh.
That is the drops that we would have in MMW. And it's great if you are a little person performer, but it's not so great if you are Kalisto.
I mean, close enough.
A few observations from this. Kalisto had a new mask. He had like some face paint on underneath it to where his face kind of, this is going to sound terrible. He had black face paint on, not blackface, black face paint. Two words, not one. So that was new, right? You know, that's good. Braun Strowman does two things that I absolutely love. In this match, he looked down in the middle of the match at Kalisto and made the most maniacal grin that I've ever seen on a human being. And that needs to be in GIF form right now. That way I can just throw it on Twitter constantly. The other thing that I love about Braun Strowman, not Roman Reigns, is whenever he says Roman Reigns, how he sort of wiggles his head back and forth in a very condescending way. And I just, it reminds me of Steve Austin, oddly enough.
Because Braun Strowman is the current rendition of Stone Cold Steve Austin on the rise.
He is. Badass redneck, saying. Country strong. Yep. Oh, man, I love it. Kansas City sucks. Gigantic wieners, as it were. And because huge, gigantic Roman Reigns chants during this match.
They were chanting for Roman a lot. It was, we want Roman, Roman sucks, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, they fell right into that trap. So guess what? He's the new Cena for the next 25 years. Sandra, I'm not going to be alive for another 25 years.
Oh, for the fuck's sake, you're not allowed to die. I have a very specific rule.
The last baby face that I will ever see will be Roman Reigns, Sandra.
That's unfortunate. That's really...
That's a horrible thought. You know what, though?
I don't think so, because I think that Braun Strowman is going to be, like, the best. And I think that he's just going to be too good for them to deny. And I think that he's going to rise,
maybe,
and I think
so.
He's going to be
maybe
the guy.
So. Maybe
as
so,
our friend
but
Alan Proven said,
Reigns is going
Stone Braun
him.
Steve Strowman. I was looking for it on Twitter just so that I could quote him properly. Stone Braun Steve Strowman, and I stand by it. Because it's very bizarre to me to be watching Retro Raw in 1997 with the rise of Stone Cold Steve Austin and then watching Braun Strowman currently in 2017, because they are so parallel. And if WWE isn't doing this on purpose, then what even are they doing? Like, listen to Retro. I'm not going to go into it because we talked about it on Retro Raw too, but oh boy, are they parallel. I compared Braun Strowman to Stone Cold Steve Austin before I knew that Stone Cold Steve Austin attacked Bret Hart in an ambulance. I didn't even know that when I made that comment. And then
all
I
can say is I cannot wait for him to bring in like the slaughterhouse truck or something and just fill the ring with blood.
I'm just saying.
That's going to be a great moment for old country strong Braun Strowman.
He's just so good. Like, it's interesting because, like, I think it was Karen, and I still don't know actually how to pronounce your Twitter name, so I apologize, but like, at KaronMR1993.
He's my favorite. I love him.
He's great. And he raised a question to us.
I think it's Karon, but I could be incorrect.
1993. But let me know how to actually pronounce that so that whenever I, you know, credit you for things that I don't just mumble a lot and then go on about how I don't know how to pronounce it. But he raised an interesting question. Do you ever think that a chosen one could be a proper, like, actual top babyface again? I don't know. Like, I'm not sure what to think about it, because it feels like not in the sense of someone that you just choose and then try to push as a babyface the way they've tried to push Roman Reigns. I think without a heel turn, a la Rocky Maivia or someone like that, right? Like, Rocky Maivia was one guy that they chose and they were like, he's going to be our guy. And the crowd turned on him and they did the right thing and they turned him heel and let the crowd boo him to the point where he could win them back over again. Roman yep. Reigns, how did he ever even get praised by the crowd in the first place, David?
I don't, this is all unfathomable to me.
But like, the way that he got praised by the crowd in the first place was that he was a part of the Shield. Did the Shield come in as baby faces that they were going to be pushed to the moon? No, yep. The Shield came in as heels and became beloved by the crowd. Right.
I still maintain, and everyone tells me I'm wrong, but I always end up being right in the end. I still maintain that Roman Reigns was never as over as Dean Ambrose or Seth Rollins in The Shield. I still maintain that. I will maintain that until the day I die.
I think he was. I think the idea of Roman Reigns, I think the hot tags of Roman Reigns, I think the pops that Roman Reigns got at the end of the matches, I think he was super over in The Shield. I'll go with that. But as a singles act without them, as a singles act who had to not wrestle in tag matches, I don't think he was ever as over.
The second that that group dissolved, he was completely buried. He was done.
Well, we wish he would have been buried. Maybe if they would have buried him, then he would have gotten over. which is the strange part of wrestling fandom today. But I mean, in terms of talking about Braun Strowman, I really hope they realize what they have here, because I think they have a major star on their hands.
Hey, look,
the crowd
look.
Is so behind Braun Strowman because he's so friggin' good, and even his matches are really good.
400-pound guys who've had 20 matches, who put on at least 3-star matches every time they go out, and have a charismatic presence to make people laugh or make people, like, bewildered. Don't grow on trees.
No.
Especially ones that do nip-ups, you fucking guys.
How in the world can he even do that? I can't do that, and I'm a tiny person.
It's nuts to me. The guy is a freak of nature, and he is lightning in a bottle, and if they don't do something with him, then they're going to end up with kind of what they've had in the case of Bray Wyatt, who was up next. Ugh. And had a,
I should never vignette. Have that reaction to Bray Wyatt, by the way. Hear how I just went, ugh.
Yeah.
He's like my favorite. What are they doing?
And he told Randy Orton that he would be waiting for him in the House of Horrors, which sounds like the world's shittiest haunted house. Every room you enter will be an endless nightmare, said Bray Wyatt.
I'm getting real disappointed when we find out what the House of Horrors is, because there's no way I can live up to my expectations.
House of Horrors, the House of Horrors is going to be a pre-taped vignette similar to the Hollywood Backlot Brawl that will eventually sprawl to the ring, and they will finish the match in the ring.
Because they said that, right? They're going to start in the House of Horrors and then finish in the ring. If the House of Horrors pre-tapes are not completely bonkers and bullshit, I am going to be so pissed. Because I want there to be I want Randy Orton to just turn into a pile of snakes. I want a pile of snakes to, like, rain down on Bray Wyatt. I want Bray Wyatt to call down the Undertaker's lightning and Kane's fire upon Randy Orton. I want every room to be a different power that Bray Wyatt purports to have. Maybe I want the House of Horrors to be everything Bray Wyatt has claimed to be. Maybe Randy Orton can get lost in an actual black hole for a little while and still somehow end up in the ring. I don't care. I want this to be bonkers. I want there to maybe be time travel or teleportation or something like that, because if it's just like, oh, a couple spooky effects and then we're in the ring and lol, it's done. I mean, what even is the point?
Bray needs to stop saying things that can't possibly come true. So, you know, that just hurts his credibility even further.
Also so, true.
And this is his match. This is the first time he's ever had his match, and I have a bad feeling that he's going to lose the match that he created, and if he does, that will be the final stake through the heart of the Dracula vampire man, Bray Wyatt.
I mean, I feel like we say that everything's going to be the final nail in his coffin, and then it's not, right? Like, someone asked me on Twitter, what's it going to take for you to give up on Bray Wyatt? I thought I had given up last year. I really did. But then he got awesome again, and I realized how much he meant to me, and he started winning things, and then he won the title, and then he pinned John Cena, and then he pinned John Cena again, and he started winning matches, and it was the most exciting that I it was the best thing in the world. And for months I was invested in Bray Wyatt versus Randy Orton. David, you know this.
Yeah.
And then at WrestleMania, what happened? The ring was maggots. It was the coolest thing in the world. I know everyone shits on the projector effects. I fucking loved it. I thought it was the greatest thing in the entire world as it was happening, because I was like, he's turning the ring to maggots. This is the coolest. But then what happened? Randy Orton didn't react to the ring being maggots. He did so.
No, he just beat him in 8 minutes.
And then he just beat him. And then it didn't matter. And then Bray Wyatt didn't react to it. And then we just went back to the way it's been. So what's it going to take for me to give up on Bray Wyatt? I don't think I can ever quit him. I don't think I can. I don't think I'm capable of it. Because he shows these flashes of brilliance. And every time he's brilliant again, I'm going to fall completely in love again. And I know that that's going to happen.
I think there are two parallels with this. You can give up on a performer ever being what you wanted. I gave up on Zack Ryder, for instance. And I said, well, I like this guy a lot, and I think he has a lot of potential, but the company's never going to see him the way that I see him. So I gave up on him. It doesn't mean that I don't still like him. And that's what's going to happen with Bray Wyatt after this, is if he loses the first time he's ever done his fucking match, then I'm going to go, you know what? The company's just never going to catch fire with him. They're just going to let that potential fire sizzle out, and that'll be the end of it. I'll still like him, but I will never hold hopes for him to ever be anything worthwhile in the company. So I think that's ultimately what it is. Bray obviously needs to win this a lot more than Randy does.
Because and the fact Bray that it's non-title gives me some hope. I know that you think it's misguided. Yeah. I know that you still think that Randy Orton is going to win. I'm really hoping that you're wrong. I'm really hoping
I'm wrong too.
That the fact that this is non-title means that Bray Wyatt could win the match while still having, obviously, Randy Orton retain the WWE Championship, go to SmackDown, face Jinder fucking Mahal at Backlash, whatever. Like, we know that that's going to happen. Yeah. The fact that it's non-title, I really, really hope that Bray Wyatt wins. What happens later in the show does not give me confidence that Bray Wyatt even knows what he's doing.
No.
As a character.
Yeah. Up next, we had kind of a throwaway segment, really horrible match between Alicia Fox and Dana Brooke. I have nothing really to add to this. I know that you'll probably want to talk about Emma, though, who came through and had some awkward moment with Dana in the ring where she hugged her. Sandra, what was all that about? Help me make sense of this.
Okay, well, I mean, you know that Emma, before Dana was Charlotte's protege, Dana was Emma's protege. So the whole story with Emma and Dana, I actually still find kind of fascinating. I mean, this match was dog shit. It was terrible.
That was the worst match I've seen in a long time.
It's terrible. And it's bizarre because when Dana Brooke was in NXT, I feel like she was getting better. But ever since she's been on the main roster, I just feel like it's one of those situations where she really hasn't been in the ring that much. She's mostly been on the outside. Her timing is terrible. Her wrestling has regressed significantly. There are better matches that I can point you to where Dana Brooke wasn't a good wrestler, but she was sort of a passable wrestler. And that is not the case anymore. She is bad. I think Alicia Fox has always gotten kind of the short end of the stick too, because Alicia for a little while I felt was progressing as well and getting a little bit better, but this just, it wasn't that, but it was less than a couple minutes long, so the match really didn't have a chance to even get going. I don't even know why Alicia and Dana were fighting, because last week on Raw they were friends, and then Emma came in and stirred the pot and said, you know, Dana's been spreading lies about you, Alicia, or something, right. And then Alicia got mad at Dana. Like, I'm not sure if Alicia was supposed to be the heel or babyface or what. Like, I don't really know what Alicia's supposed to be at this point, because I don't watch 205 Live.
Yeah.
Dana is supposed to be a babyface, and I'm into Dana Brooke as a babyface, actually. I kind of am into Dana Brooke as a babyface, and I kind of like the interplay and the story between Emma just stirring the pot, and then, you know, Dana Brooke pins Alicia Fox after the worst Samoan driver I've ever seen, because her finish is supposed to be a Samoan driver. She didn't quite pull it off, because apparently she can't even do that anymore. It reminded me very much of the early days of Dana Brooke trying to do her finish, which, it's not pretty at all.
I think
some more time in NXT would have been very beneficial to Dana Brooke, because I think
I think that Dana Brooke needed that extra time in NXT.
Yeah, maybe even more than Nia Jax, who I also think needed it quite a
bit. But they both needed seasoning. I'll tell you who does not need any seasoning, though.
Emma?
No. She's perfectly fine too.
I don't understand why Emma's not wrestling matches and why she's not even involved in any sort of wrestling story.
Because she ended up balking at a concept that they pitched to her, and she flubbed it. And in the world of Vince McMahon, that means you're dead.
So which sucks, because you know who would actually be a good wrestler to work with people like, and we're leading to Emma versus Dana, it seems, right? And this is something that I'm actually pretty interested in. Like, I want to see
it'll
Emma
probably be
Dana
on Raw too. I don't foresee that on any pay-per-view.
No, yeah. But yeah. I think that if Dana can work with people like Emma, or work with people like Sasha, or work with people like Bayley, or work with people who can wrestle, right? And Emma's a heel right now, so Emma versus Dana makes sense. I just really want to see Emma do more, because Emma's so good at wrestling.
She is very good, and I don't foresee them using her for anything because of the old Vince McMahon ordeal of, I tell you to do something, and you ask me how high I want you to jump. And she didn't even want to jump to begin with, so that's never going to look well on her.
I mean,
her
the gimmick
the
change made no sense in the first place because Evil Emma.
Evil Emma was very fun and I liked it, and the sexism thing of looking good and being hot. I don't know. To me, it's really stupid. So Enzo Amore, Big Cass, your favorites. I know.
Yeah.
Trust me. I am incredibly, incredibly well aware. And Seth Rollins, they were coming out for their match. All of a sudden, though, that butt nugget, if I may quote Mr. Carl, the Machine Gun Anderson.
Which is something, like, I roll my eyes when the club are on screen, too, because I have been given no reason to care about them. And I should just roll my eyes and want to walk out of the room at butt nugget, but it so perfectly describes Enzo Amore
It is the absolute perfect thing to describe him. They come out and they just lay waste to Enzo. He is fucking dead, right? Like
there was much rejoicing.
Yes, there was for a brief time, and then there was a lot more rejoicing because GM Kurt Angle came out and announced that he would have a replacement for Enzo Amore effective immediately. It was, of course, Finn Balor. Balor not getting the same kind of vibe that he got before his injury, I would say. He's a little more toned down. I think maybe that may tip the scales, though, whenever he becomes the Demon eventually. But he's kind of simmering at the moment as opposed to boiling, I would say.
I just don't know if they know what to do with Finn Balor at this point because he's not in an actual story or direction right now.
Yeah, and just sort of floundering there. Like, they brought him back for nothing.
Yeah,
that's what it feels like.
They brought him back to be Seth Rollins' tag partner in a random tag match, which doesn't make any sense because Seth Rollins injured him in the first place.
He came back to work squash matches thus far and fill in for people in tag matches. That's his gimmick right now. And to me, that's kind of stupid. This was your standard match, the club and Samoa Joe versus Big Cass, Seth Rollins and Finn Balor. The babyfaces ended up getting the win. It ended up being Rollins, not Finn, that got the win here. I was so excited to see Seth Rollins drop the pedigree as his finishing move because he did the worst pedigree that I've ever seen in my fucking life.
It was a terrible pedigree, to be fair. So, the sad thing is, before people pointed it out to me on Twitter, like I said, I actively did watch this show. I sat in front of this show for the entire show. Raw is so freaking long, you guys. I sat in front of it, I watched the entire show, but I can't help it if my brain just tunes out every once in a while. I didn't even notice that he had dropped the pedigree.
Yeah, he dropped the pedigree. He has a new finishing maneuver. I would best describe it as a rainmaker, but instead of using the elbow, he uses the knee. So I'm good with that. That's cool to me. I like it. I love the Rainmaker, though. I think the Rainmaker is one of the best finishes in all of wrestling. It's something that you can, something that I love about it is it's a move that you can hit on anybody, no matter their size. As to where the pedigree, not necessarily always the case. I couldn't imagine Yokozuna taking a pedigree.
No.
So this, nothing really to say about this besides I thought that it was cool that, Rollins dropped that. How about you?
I don't remember nearly enough of the match to even comment on it, to be honest. Like, I wish but it was inconsequential to me. Like,
it was a very throwaway tag match. But so it led to something better, though. You know what it led to?
What?
Alexa Bliss coming out. Oh!
Isn't she a delight? Aren't you so glad that you get to talk about Alexa Bliss now? I miss her on SmackDown.
I am jealous of you because now you get to gush over Charlotte the way that I have for the past year.
Controversial opinion. Alexa Bliss is a much better promo than Charlotte.
Oh, I completely disagree. Ugh. Ugh.
That's why I said controversial opinion. I still think that Charlotte sounds very stilted when she speaks. I think she's decent at controlling the crowd, but I don't think she sounds necessarily human. I think Alexa Bliss sounds like an actual human when she talks.
Well, see, that's part of the charm with Charlotte, though, is that she sounds better than human.
But she talks like this and then talks to the crowd like she is trying to get a point across.
Well, see, that's commanding a crowd, though. She's a queen. She has to speak with that inflection in her voice.
And I think Alexa Bliss commanded the crowd just fine here with sounding like an actual human.
That's in two entirely different characters, though, Sutter. And they're both great.
They are, and I love them both. I'm just saying that in terms of my promo preferences, I prefer Alexa Bliss. Wrestling-wise, Charlotte has Alexa beat hands down, obviously. But
they are two different beasts, though, and it's, to me, if you come up to me and you go, David, what's better, chocolate or vanilla? It depends on what I'm in the fucking mood for that day, but I'll eat both of them. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to fucking be picky about it. So, like, these two, I think we can agree, they are the two best promos in the women's division.
Yes, they right? are. They absolutely okay. are. I loved Alexa commanding the crowd here, though. There was a guy, speaking of Kansas City being full of dickbags, right? Like, Alexa Bliss walks out, and before she even speaks, there was someone who was like, "Shut up, Alexa!" Which... to be fair, I guess she's a heel, so it's good that she's getting that kind of a response. But she hadn't even spoken yet. And also, just kindly leave, sir. You don't deserve to be in her presence.
Yeah, I completely agree. She is adorable. I love her very much. I was a big fan. I predicted that she would win that title from Becky Lynch at TLC.
I did too, actually.
And I said it was the best move that they could do. And everybody was apprehensive about it. And they were like, "No, Becky needs to hold the title for a long time." And I said, "No, this is how you build a star." She won the title. What fucking happened? She became a star. I'm a genius, mm-hmm. Sandra. And
of
so
course,
are you,
it's all clearly. About you being a genius. But I'm a genius too, damn it.
God damn it. We're geniuses. High five.
High five.
So this was just a whole lot of fun.
I really like the way Alexa Bliss handled the what chance, because I would love for the what chance to die, because they're so frustrating. Yeah. And I really feel like there are things performers can do to counteract the what chance. For instance, call the crowd out on their fucking bullshit and say, "Oh, if Alexa Bliss is great, say what?" Or whatever she said. I don't remember exactly the words.
No, that is the gist of it. Yeah.
And then the crowd, of course, they played right into it and went, "What?" She goes, "Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought." And then they were like, "Fair play, Alexa." And the what chance stopped because she was that good. She handled the crowd like a veteran, and she's very new at this relatively, right? Like
She is. And that's very hard to teach. It's easier to teach people to become a wrestler than it is to teach people to have a swagger and a persona that is able to shut up 20,000 people who are actively wanting you off the script, off the stage, off the screen.
Mm-hmm. My coworker and I were talking about this tonight, and he pointed out to me, and I think it's an interesting point, that Alexa was a cheerleader for a while. So being exuberant and, you know, playing off a crowd and leading a crowd is something that might come a little more naturally to her than some people who just come from like fitness model backgrounds or whatever. And it reminded me that Carmella was also a cheerleader, and she kind of does the same thing. She plays off the crowd pretty well. So maybe there's something to it. Maybe it's just those two. I don't know.
Could be, but I mean, who really knows? Naomi was also a cheerleader, and I haven't seen that from her, but
that's
to be fair.
She
also
I think she's getting
heel.
There, but it's taken her a while.
Yeah. It really has. Bliss comes out and she runs down Bayley. She says that she's there on Raw to fight, and she's there on Raw to win. Bayley comes out and they have a little bit of a tiff back and forth. Alexa says something that I didn't really care for. Is she goes, you act like you've never been kissed by a boy. I'm like, oh, really? If we gotta go there, seriously,
let's never go there with Bayley. Never.
Let's stop sexualizing everybody, you guys.
Let's make that not a thing. Because part of the appeal of Bayley is that that's not part of her character. I don't want to say I don't have a problem with Bayley interacting with men. I love when Bayley was in backstage segments with The New Day. I love when Bayley was in backstage segments with Sheamus and Cesaro. I love that kind of thing. What I do not ever, ever, ever want to see on Raw television or SmackDown television or any WWE television is Bayley focused in a romantic storyline with a boy.
And man, that sounds like what they're aiming for.
I really hope it was a throwaway line, because if it wasn't, oh boy, am I going to be upset.
Yeah, I would be upset as well. That's just not good. Sasha comes out eventually, and they kind of have their way with Bliss verbally. And Bliss says that she does not trust Sasha. And Sasha promptly proves that she shouldn't trust her. By attempting to beat her down. These two end up having a match, and Alexa ends up walking out of the match towards the end. And just says, hey, enough of this. I'm not here for this. Walks out, loses via count out intentionally. That was essentially Bayley also had a little bit of a physical exchange with her following that. But yeah, I don't know. Who do you think wins on Sunday for that?
I don't know. It's hard for me to pick against Bayley because she is my favorite, and I always want to pick Bayley.
Bear in mind, it will be in Bayley's hometown with her dad in front row.
Yeah, which, I mean, intellectually, with my head, I think Alexa probably wins. But I don't want to pick against Bayley. My issue, though, with this is that it just felt so flat. It felt so anticlimactic. This was not the way for Alexa Bliss to even feel important or relevant. Like, I get it, and I get it in terms of Alexa Bliss's character, because she's always been kind of a little shithead, right?
Yeah.
She's always, you know, she brought in La Luchadora. When Becky Lynch was La Luchadora to fool Alexa Bliss, Alexa Bliss was like, well, I'll one up with you. I will bring in another La Luchadora, and I will fool you, and then I will use La Luchadora to actually win the SmackDown championship from you, and we'll continue fooling you. And it turned out to be Mickie James, and walking away kind of fits with Alexa Bliss's character, but not going after her doesn't really fit with Sasha's.
Yeah.
And it really felt flat to me, and I didn't like it. I didn't like how flat it felt, because I want both of them to look like stars, and this was just kind of like, eh, whatever.
I agree 100%. Like, you, I literally have in my notes, it all felt so flat. So we're again on the same page with this. I think that Bayley is going to win on Sunday, and I think that's the right call. I think that Alexa should actually be the one to take the title off of Bayley, but and not automatically right away. They need to build Alexa a little bit more.
I'm really excited for their match, because Bayley versus Alexa Bliss has always been a really good match. Even like back in the days of Alexa Bliss being a glitter tutu fairy who could barely wrestle because she was still very new, she and Bayley worked well together. And then when Alexa Bliss became a dickhead with Blake and Murphy and faced Bayley, they had good matches. So I'm really looking forward to Bayley versus Alexa Bliss. This is absolutely the right call for a number one contender. I want Bayley to win because Bayley is my favorite. I probably won't be, like, super mad if Alexa wins, because yeah. I also really like Alexa, but...
I will be hardcore rooting for Alexa Bliss, who, now that Charlotte is gone, is easily my favorite woman on the Raw Women's Division.
Which is fair. She's great.
The next segment, though, my favorite of the night, Sandra. I love this. This is everything. I'm happy that Dean Ambrose is on Raw now. Because of stuff like this.
I'm happy he's on Raw, too, because I don't have to talk about him as much. So. I'm glad it worked out for us in that way.
It did. Chris Jericho and Dean Ambrose are backstage, and they're trying to build their game plan for later in the night. And they begin mentioning all of the things that Dean Ambrose has done to Chris Jericho that we mentioned earlier in the night. He ripped up the jacket, the 69 thumbtacks, the potted plant Mitch. Everything that they've had to struggle through in these dire times. But you know what really sealed the deal here? Dean Ambrose said that in order for them to bond completely, Sandra, he needed to be off of Chris Jericho's list. He saw his name on there. He saw his name on the list. He needed it scratched off the list. They came to a compromise.
I mean, Chris Jericho. One gets off the list, Chris Jericho said at first. But you know what? You know what happens when you, and I don't remember the actual verbiage, but you know what happens when you buy a Chris Jericho jacket? You unmade the list.
I loved it so much. And so Dean Ambrose, exuberant over the fact that he's no longer on the list, gives a hearty pat on the back to Chris Jericho, who begins to look agitated as Dean Ambrose walks.
He was hitting him fairly hard.
He was. It was a very hearty backslap. As he walks away, Chris Jericho gets a twinkle in his eye, and he quickly scribbles Dean Ambrose's name back on the list. How wonderful. 10 out of 10. I love this segment.
I feel like Dean Ambrose belongs on the list, to be fair. I don't think that jacket is a worthy replacement, so I am glad. I mean, it was very kind of Chris Jericho to give Dean Ambrose the false hope that he was no longer on the list. The worst of all punishments, being on the list. However, he does still kind of belong on the list, and I'm kind of glad that he's there.
Yeah. There's no doubt. After this, we had a match between Curt Hawkins and Apollo Crews after Apollo Crews ended up winning with his sit-out powerbomb, which is a cool finish. We got Titus O'Neil, who came to the ring and began to extend his hand in the Titus brand. So let's just not even fucking talk about this bullshit.
Oh, excuse me. You're going to deny me the time.
I'm going to deny you the time to talk about Apollo Crews.
How much I love Curt Hawkins, first of all, and Curt Hawkins' star-making factory, which is amazing. The fact that Curt Hawkins is now saying, yes, I'm so glad. This is exactly the reaction I wanted. So Curt Hawkins' star-making factory is one of my favorite things, because now his latest thing is, yeah, everyone who beats me on Raw becomes a star. And I'm hoping that Apollo Crews follows suit.
I was going to say,
suit.
I have a feeling, Sandra, that this gimmick is going to go up in flames after this week.
Because Apollo Crews, right? Because, oh, bless Apollo Crews. He's so dull. But Apollo Crews looking disgusted at Titus O'Neil is the most interesting thing Apollo Crews has done since he was spelling words. And I'm kind of actually really hoping that maybe Apollo Crews and Titus O'Neil turns into a really interesting main event story. Or is there even main event anymore? Or is it just superstars?
I don't know. All I know is that the two black guys are together in an angle on Raw. Gee, who would have thunk it, right?
Right. But, like, I would love for this to be on a secondary show and for Titus Brand and whatnot to actually be a main feature thread on Superstars. And I might actually check out bits of Superstars because, yes, this is exactly the sort of bonkers thing that amuses me. And it's exactly the sort of bonkers thing that I think Titus O'Neil is perfect for. I don't think he should be wrestling matches. I think he should be essentially trying to cop Famous B's gimmick from Lucha Underground. And that's essentially what he's doing, is just stealing Famous B's gimmick from Lucha Underground and trying to make it a win. I mean, the Titus brand has not been very successful, and that's part of the joke, right? But Apollo Crews, maybe he could show some personality being around Titus O'Neil. Like, Darren Young was a lot more interesting when he got with Titus O'Neil. Also, I love Hawkins.
This just gave me a migraine.
You don't expect me to be on the Raw Rundown and then tell me that I can't talk about Curt Hawkins and Apollo Crews, which is like the most segment, which is exactly up my alley. Come on now.
I don't know. I think the Dana Brooke one from earlier was even worse.
And I had feelings about that too. See how this is right up my alley?
You know what I had feelings about, Sandra?
What?
Roman Reigns using the real-life death of his real-life brother.
This was very awkward.
And equating it to having a bad week because Braun Strowman was mean to him.
Now, I did look up the interview on WWE.com because this appalled me when I first saw it, right?
Yeah, it's disgusting.
The wording that was shown on Raw, this is the wording that was shown on Raw. Physically, I'm as beat up as I am emotionally. This has been two of the roughest weeks of my professional career and life. I've never experienced a loss this close since it's my only blood brother, but I've also never experienced a beatdown like Braun Strowman gave me. It's unfortunate because whatever point he's trying to get across, he's handling it the wrong way. And whether he thinks he's a monster or not, I'm the top dog. I'm the big dog in this yard. I said it before and I'll say it again. I already took out the greatest legend of all time. If anybody should be worried, it should be Braun Strowman. He's got a whole storm of payback that's about to come his way this Sunday. Now, things that I think are interesting about this, if they wouldn't be using the real-life death of Roman Reigns' brother for this, I kind of like him pointing out that he's the big dog in the yard and, like, he took out the greatest legend of all time. Because what a dick move, right? Like, Roman Reigns is a heel. Roman Reigns is the biggest dickhead here. If he points out, like, I took out The Undertaker, I can take out Braun Strowman, I kind of like that as a character motivation. That makes me interested in Roman Reigns.
What,
but I don't like...
Why
wouldn't
he just say, I already beat him clean once. I'm gonna make this jobber job out again.
He could also say that, and they chose not to say that for some reason. Maybe because they're protecting Braun. I kind of doubt that's the reason, but...
Maybe because they realized what a fucking mistake it was to have Braun Strowman lose cleanly to Roman Reigns right before WrestleMania.
I mean, I will say, Braun Strowman still looks like a fucking star, so it didn't really make that much of a difference, right? Like, Braun Strowman still looks amazing, and so they're still trying to present him as amazing like he is. But... the whole WWE.com interview, the whole context of it, there were a few paragraphs before that where they talked about Rosie and they interviewed Roman, like, how are you doing? And Roman talks about his brother, and WWE.com is like, well, we extend our condolences and we extend our sympathies. And then it says again, like, again, we just want to reiterate our sympathies. So this is actually what they showed on Raw. Out of context was a response to them actually talking to Roman Reigns about the death of his brother, which is why he would mention the death of his brother and then go into Braun Strowman, because the question from WWE.com at that point was about Braun Strowman specifically. So Roman Reigns was the one, you know, I say Roman Reigns in air quotes because who knows how involved he was in all of this. I really hope they cleared it with him before they ran this. And if they did,
yeah,
and if he was fine with
it,
then fair play.
I'm hoping it wasn't his verbiage.
I'm sure it wasn't his actual verbiage. I hope that they ran it by him. And if he was fine with it, and if they ran it by him, then fair play. That's his decision. He can choose whether they want to use that or not.
Yeah, even I think I would be better with it if they didn't clear it with him.
Really?
Yeah, because then it couldn't fall back on his shoulders. If somebody told me, okay, at your work, you're going to compare the death of your mother to this. And I'd be all like, well, no, you're not going to do that because I'm a decent human being and I wouldn't. Do that.
You're going
to
compare the death of your father to Jinder Mahal versus Antonio Cesaro.
See, that's for a joke.
Right.
That's the difference. I can make people laugh by doing that. But in terms of like doing an emotional story where people are invested and blah, blah, blah. No, I would absolutely refuse that because you're trying to equate something that will get people upset. That's the general gist of it, right? There was a petition with 50,000 signatures to get Braun Strowman fired after what he did to Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
So whether we believe it or not, there are people out there who think this is all real. And there are people out there who get upset by it. And so to equate that with the death of your brother, hey, it automatically makes you sound selfish. Oh, man, I'm so beat up. My brother died, but man, my ribs hurt. Like,
yeah. Well, and I think the thing that I came away with was, even after reading the whole interview, I was like, when I saw this run on Raw, I just felt queasy and I felt uneasy about the whole thing. And I don't think that was the goal.
It made me feel dirty and wrong.
Yeah, it did to me too. And it was like, I get they're probably trying to use this to quell boos, because how are we going to boo this man when his brother just died? But it just felt wrong. Like, it
made me
feel like it was drawing heat. It didn't feel like it was, it didn't feel like Roman was valiant for fighting through it necessarily. Yeah. It wasn't even like, you know, my brother died and this is like the really, like, it's one of the hardest times of my life, obviously, but I know that I have to prove to the fans that I can still be there for them. It didn't really feel like that type of valiance. It just felt dirty.
Yeah, it made me feel dirty.
It was an execution that was very poor.
It made me feel dirty and wrong, like looking at Kenny McIntosh's Google search history.
Mm-hmm. Exactly next, like that.
Up next, though, we have the big main event segment leading up to this. The Miz and Maryse ran into Angle backstage. And Miz tells him that he has his partner, and his partner reached out to him. It's going to be somebody that everybody is going to fear. And the Drifter, Elias Samson, walks in the background.
I love Angle, the Drifter so much.
And Angle goes, oh, that's an interesting choice for a partner. Miz goes, no, not him. So good.
I know that you and Kenny are never going to give the Drifter his proper time on Raw, but can I just say how much I love the Drifter just drifting around Raw? It's my favorite thing.
So long as he never wrestles a match and he does this backstage, he will be one of my favorite characters. This is what he needs to do. He just needs to show up backstage. It needs to be like the new GTV. He just he fucking walks in and interrupts people's promos, and then that's that. Just like build him wrestling for like, don't have him wrestle until like SummerSlam at the very earliest.
Just build it as long as they built Emelina.
Yeah, exactly. At least it would be funny.
Yeah.
Drifter's great. Enjoying him currently. Let's hope that he stays on the current path, though.
Eventually, when he wrestles the matches, you'll be surprised. He's actually pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's definitely fine.
Like, and he gets that like drift away heat where people are like, "We fucking hate you," which is great. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, no. He was very fun in NXT. I enjoyed it. Chris Jericho and Dean Ambrose came out, and The Miz came out and said, "Here is my tag team partner."
Nobody showed up.
Nobody showed up. Whoever it was stood him up, apparently, or so it would seem.
So Valiant babyface The Miz has to fight.
Yeah.
Two-on-one handicap match.
Yeah. Miz says that the match is canceled since his partner didn't show up. Angle pops out and says, nope, you got to wrestle a handicap match now until your partner shows up. That's exactly what happens. The Valiant babyface Miz ends up taking on Jericho and Ambrose 2-on-1 and actually works heel and isolates them.
And almost wins.
Almost wins by isolating them solo.
The role of John Cena will be played by The Miz.
Yeah, like seriously, what the fuck is going on here?
This made no sense. Everyone was really pissed about the Kalisto Braun Strowman situation with Kalisto winning the dumpster match. This end match infuriated me.
Zero wrestling psychology. Could you imagine Jim Cornette's type of rant if he saw this?
Oh, I wish I could hear it.
Like I can hear it in my fucking head. That no good motherfucker! Oh, man.
Well, you want to know something really funny that happened the other day?
What's that?
So I wore my Jim Cornette shirt, the same one that you have with his face on it.
Sure, yeah, Jim Cornette face.
Yeah, Jim Cornette face shirt. Someone asked me if George H.W. Bush was on my shirt.
Oh, no! Don't tell Jim!
I know.
He will be so pissed.
I had to fight back laughter so hard. I was at work, and it was a customer who's a regular, and it's like a really nice guy. So I was like, no, it's Jim Cornette. He's a wrestling manager. Like, because most customers don't understand, even when I'm like, yeah, I like wrestling, they don't understand that, yes, I actually like wrestling, because they just are like, but you're a girl.
Of course.
I had to fight back laughter so hard at the irony of the situation. It's like, not only did you think it was someone it wasn't, but you thought Jim Cornette was George H.W. Bush.
The ultimate slap in the face to the Southern liberal Jim Cornette. Oh, God. These three ended up brawling over to the announce table, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, The Miz is up on the table, and Dean Ambrose, boom, gets him on the table. The lights go out. The Bray Wyatt ends up hitting. Gotta do that. Bam. And Bray Wyatt emerges where The Miz once was. Now, I always love seeing this stuff. You know, we were talking about, like, The Undertaker randomly appearing and how Ryan Satin ended up posting that and sort of spoiling the surprise of it, revealing the Santa Claus in it. And I always think
revealing about, the magic behind the magic.
Yeah, exactly. Showing that there is a little escape latch where the woman gets sawed in half, or so something of the sort. And so with this, I always think, though, like, they're revealing the trick to everyone in attendance. 20,000 people are watching The Miz slink away and Bray Wyatt take his place, while Ambrose is like, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah.
So it is kind of funny to me whenever this happens. So Bray Wyatt ended up being his partner. Sister Abigail's. I think it was Ambrose.
Now, my question, was Bray Wyatt the original partner that was sent via courier message to
Miz? I think so. I think so.
Because would Bray Wyatt send a courier and then just be late? I mean, he has the power of teleportation. Why wouldn't he be on time?
Well, I mean, you're asking a whole lot from a writing team that doesn't even know the product.
Also, why would Bray Wyatt want to team with The Miz? Also, why would Bray Wyatt, his sister Abigail, and Dean Ambrose and not pin Dean Ambrose? Because apparently he can just tag himself into the match by virtue of being there, because it seemed like he was the legal man all of a sudden, even though no one could be bothered to pay attention to who was actually legal and who wasn't. Also, why would he then, if he wasn't the legal man, why wouldn't he let Miz pin Dean Ambrose to win the match? Also, why would Bray Wyatt hit the sister Abigail on The Miz and then not just pin Dean Ambrose anyway? Also, why doesn't Bray Wyatt care about winning matches? Also, what does any of this even mean, David? I'm so frustrated.
I was going to say the answer to all of that is Bray Wyatt doesn't care about winning matches. One of your questions was, why doesn't he care about winning matches? He's lethargic. I wish I had a real answer for you, Sandra, but unfortunately,
I'm so upset with the end of Raw because Bray Wyatt was really bad on such a winning streak. And I mean, even if he doesn't win all of the matches in the world, fine, fair enough. But why in the world? This is exactly like when he had that cage match one against John Cena, and John Cena was laid out, and he just walked out the door instead of trying to pin John Cena. Like, yeah. Why? Why would you do that? I don't understand. What is your motivation for being here? Who exactly are you creeping out? What does this have to do with the House of Horrors and Randy Orton? What does this have to do with your motivation for taking over Raw and being a god and the eater of worlds and a monster among men? Oh, wait, that's Braun Strowman now. But Bray Wyatt used to call himself a monster, right? Like, none of this makes any fucking sense. Why would Bray Wyatt team with The Miz against Dean Ambrose and Chris Jericho? Like, the only tenuous history I have is two of the only feuds that Bray Wyatt has won in the entire history of Bray Wyatt were against Dean Ambrose and Chris Jericho. So is this just for old time's sake and kicks? Why wouldn't he at least beat them again?
It's really hard for me to care if someone wins or loses when they don't care if they win or lose. That's really difficult.
I want Bray Wyatt to care and react. I want that so badly.
I wish that he would. I don't know if he ever will at this point. This was a very flat Raw. I didn't think it was horrible, but it wasn't good by any stretch of the means. Sandra, you do not give out ratings, but you do give out thumbs.
Yes.
Would this be a thumbs up, thumbs down, or thumbs in the middle?
This is a thumbs down Raw for me. Not so vehemently as everyone else seems to think, but by virtue of it being a go-home show as well, did it really get you jazzed for Payback? Like, did make you think,
hell no,
so excited for Payback because I really want to see these confrontations. It did not accomplish what it needed to accomplish. And also, like, very little of it made sense.
Do not give one iota of a fuck about any of the matches on Sunday.
No.
Like, if I didn't have to watch and review it for ITR, I would not watch it.
Like, I have to work on Sunday, and I'm really not that upset about it. Like, hoping that Bayley and Alexa don't go on first so that I can get home in time to watch their match.
Or maybe they will go on first and you can just put on the network and start it from the beginning and then you'll be done. Yeah.
So, you know, don't tweet me spoilers for the women's match.
Yeah, guys.
But just let me know if that match goes on first.
Yeah. Stop it with the spoilers, you guys.
Yeah, I really don't appreciate them. at all.
Yeah. It's very rude. There's no reason. We work crazy shifts. I never get to Raw until after Raw is over or nearly over, because on Mondays, that's my second busiest work day to Tuesdays. So I'm constantly busy on Mondays, you guys, and I don't get to that stuff. So no spoilers, please.
And I'll say 99% of our audience is super, super cool.
And oh, yeah.
And that's why I check my Twitter notifications, because people will be like, no spoilers, but you're going to love SmackDown, or no spoilers, but there's a really cool thing that happens and I can't wait to hear what you think about it. Right. I don't mind those notifications. Those are fine. That doesn't tell me anything. Telling me who the number one contender is last week, which wasn't even on Twitter. That was just a friend of mine who texted me, or telling me who the number one contenders to the tag team titles are this week. And I realize it was probably inadvertent that you tweeted me the spoiler.
Spoilers happened.
But spoilers happened. If I'm not live tweeting a show, there's a good chance I'm not watching the show yet.
Yeah, no shit, right? Something that we do on this program, though, Sandra, I'll go ahead and go first. I would give this a 5.5 out of 10.
Okay.
I thought that this was very in the middle. Something that we do on the show, you never give ratings for things. You always give thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle.
I can never decide. Ratings are hard.
Ratings are hard, but it's a lot easier whenever you have to pick for someone else. Sandra, what do you think Kenny McIntosh would give this episode of Monday Night Raw?
I thought you were going to ask me this. I really have no idea, honestly. Like, I don't know how much certain things are going to anger him versus how much he's going to enjoy other stuff. I'm just going to go with 6 out of 10, but I could be way off base because I don't know.
That's a fair guess. Kenny usually runs a 0.5 average higher than I do, I found. So that would make sense, a 6 out of 10. That's what Kenny said. From his mouth. You heard it here first, folks. You guys, we ended up going about an hour and 55 minutes. Good portion for Raw with Sandra, who never gets to speak about such matters of a three-hour horse trough of piss and bile that is Monday Night Raw.
So long, you guys.
It's so long, and we even got some news for you at the very top of it. So, man, oh man, we did some good stuff. You'd find me on Twitter at ZoopSoul, ZOOPSOUL. Ain't I great? Yes, I am.
Of course you are, darling. I am on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Also, check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. This past week, we just put up In Your House Revenge of the Taker review. So if you're listening along with Retro Raw, which, you know, we've been recording on a weekly basis, and if you want to hear the pay-per-views, that's at the $5 subscription level. There are interviews going up every week at the $3 level. I actually need to put up all my notes for Retro Raws because I got a few weeks behind and I kind of just forgot to post my show notes. But if you want to hear my random doodling stuff that doesn't always make the show, even just if you subscribe $1 a month, then there are things to listen to. There's the WrestleMania 6 review. I think the Wrestle Kingdom show that you and Robert did is at the $1 level as well. So even if you just give us $1 a month, there's stuff to listen to, there's stuff to read, there's stuff going on Patreon, more content going up all the time. What else do we need to plug? There are still shows.
I mean, really, the $3 entry as well. That's a pretty decent. All you gotta do is just not get Starbucks one day out of the month.
That's real true. That's absolutely true. Are we putting up? I think the regular current pay-per-views, actually, if you want to hear David and Kenny talk about Payback, that's at the $3 level as well. So if you just pledge $3, then next week when they watch Payback and have to talk about it, and I gladly will not talk about it, that's going to be at the $3 level on Patreon. So all sorts of content going up.
Something that's in the pipeline as well. I've already watched it. I'm just waiting on Kenny to get a little bit of free time with the Wade Barrett shows. Stu
Tickets
Bennett
still available at insidetheropes.co.uk for venues that I can't remember which ones are done. I know he did Cork tonight. I think London, Manchester, and Glasgow are still coming up. And then tickets for also Alberto El Patron in Birmingham later this week.
And Goldberg in June as well. So yeah, that'll be a good time. But we will be covering ECW One Night Stand 2005 for Lucy Nevins. So that will be a excellent show That is going to be very emotional. I may even break down in tears. I have a tough time of talking about that show without getting emotional. So it should be a very good podcast, I would imagine.
It's good to be emotional about wrestling. I'm glad I'm not the only one who cries about it.
It is a utter wonderful, splendorific, splendiferous thing. Wrestling and emotions. Wrestling with emotions, even, you guys.
Yes.
Yeah, we could be. You guys, we will be back with the SmackDown summary as led by Sandra tomorrow. That will be a good time. I've watched half of SmackDown. Looking forward to the second half to see how it ends. Cannot wait, you guys. Hope you enjoyed this 2-hour edition of the Raw Rundown, complete with news items and rantings. Until next time, take care of yourself, take care of others, and be nice to virtually everyone that you meet, because they will reciprocate the niceness to others. And together, we can make the world a better place. Take Aww. Care.
That's so lovely. Bye.
It is. Bye!